KPCA LP, Petaluma, California. Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, co-hosting the show every Friday from 11 to noon with Jason Davies and Janice Peter Thompson.
Good morning.
Where's Janice?
My mic is hot. I'm going to put that off.
Where's Janice?
Janice, I think, had to take care of something. You know.
Bio break.
Probably. She's in bad. Hey.
Good morning.
Biology.
We just told everybody where you were.
Did you? Well, not exactly, but probably too much information.
Exactly. Yep.
Friday at 9:30. Okay, so how was everyone's week?
Busy week.
That's busy.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on.
Yep. I'm going to mention that we have Dennis Postley here as a guest today. Dennis is a Petaluma activist and has run for Petaluma City Council, so he's active. Good morning, Dennis.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I know things have been going on this week. I didn't make a list particularly, but what's going on?
Things have been going on. Well, if Janice went to a meeting she might want to talk about. I don't know.
Well, Monday's council meeting, the 24th at 6:45, the council will be talking about the Corona site in Corona and McDowell Boulevard, where we're looking at putting a smart station. But the development project, a lot of people are concerned because it's a high-density, single-family homes. And instead of, actually, let me backtrack. Instead of saying high density, it's single family homes in an area that is kind of like an island. There is concern because a lot of people feel as though it should be a higher density project. It needs to have some lower income housing on there.
Okay, and
we're talking about
McDowell and Corona.
McDowell and Corona. And we feel as though working with the senior citizens across the street at Youngstown and the Petaluma Estates Mobile Home Park, they want to have a space where they can actually walk and feel safe. And what we realize is the council is looking at single-family homes next to a rail station, which is kind of opposite of what you really want to do when you're developing around a rail station. You want higher density. We feel as though there should be more like condo apartment living.
Mixed use,
and we also want like a coffee shop.
Yeah,
and maybe like an Aquas Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
I know Acre Coffee would like to go there. Aquas has stated that they would, or some business like that, because these senior citizens have no place to go. They're on also a little bit of an island, and they want to make sure the community is walkable. And, you know, a few weeks ago we had this walk from Corona McDowell all the way up to Beyond the Glory because Kathy Miller had said, you know, you can just walk up there.
Yeah.
And the fact is their sidewalks are missing.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes into, I went to a Sonoma County Transportation Authority meeting in Santa Rosa, and I was looking at the list that Petaluma was presenting for this. And the list, you know, is basically 1 through 10. There are almost zero sidewalks and intersection changes for pedestrian bikes, cars, trucks, whatever. The main project is Rainier, and it says $115 million will go to that. The Caulfield Crossing, it's to be determined what's going to happen with that. And all these other projects are like out in 2028, 2035, 2025. And so I feel as though the council is working on one project at the same time telling people we're going to go ahead and fix the streets and the ones in front of your home. And it, the math doesn't work. And they also have this in as a crosstown interchange, crosstown connector interchange. The interchange, there's been no environmental impact report done, so there's no knowledge of how much it would cost, and we know it's probably about $40 million. So they have over $140 million for one project. And at the same time, other cities are looking at underground utility lines, such as what we could do by the D Street Bridge to Lakeville. All those utility lines could be undergrounded, so you could make the curves in the roads less curvy, make it safer for bikes, pedestrians, cars, and trucks. And the council's just not going in that direction. They're putting all their money into one project. And at the same time, we think the street in front of our house is going to get done. And other cities are just really looking at what we can do for the community to make our communities more walkable. We're talking about Cloverdale, Sonoma, Cotati. You know, Santa Rosa has its own, you know, stuff because they're so huge. And then there's the county. And I just think if you're going to put a ballot measure on the public to vote on, you need to be very clear on what the public is really getting. Because going back to the Corona project for the SMART train, there are no sidewalks in this area. The egress and ingress into this project is across the street from Youngstown Mobile Home Park. It's dangerous, and senior citizens don't want to be in wheelchairs. They want to walk. And the community is telling the council what they want, but the majority on the council doesn't appear to be listening. So Monday's council meeting is really important for people to come and listen and actually make more public comment. The public comment was actually closed. I've heard it's going to be reopened. And basically, they didn't start this agenda item until 10:30 at night. They were done at 2:30 the next morning. And I'm sorry, nobody can think that well. And they should actually just go back, start with public comment, and actually have a true public discussion. Because we always know, you know, Mike Healy counts votes. He always has his four votes. Well, I wish those people that were his followers would actually listen to what the public was saying. We're not against a project.
Right.
We want this project to happen. But we want it to be a good, solid project. Because I've been talking about, you know, transportation and how many big trucks, 73-foot trucks get off at Washington Street, and a lot of those are going to the post office. The post office works 24 hours, 7 days a week. These big trucks are going up McDowell. I'm taking a ride onto Corona, and just before the rail crossing, they have to cut into the post office. It's dangerous, and apparently council members didn't know that the post office was open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. There's no traffic study for this project. Zero traffic study. And so we want to make sure that a traffic study is done. We want to look at making it more of a mixed use. And we want to have a little bit of retail there. How about a coffee shop? How about a little, you know, place you can go buy a sandwich? And I think it could be quite successful as we're integrating the Sonoma Mountain Parkway with the rest of the community. And then, you know, we go back to the fact that the Corona overcrossing is not part of this SCTA list.
Mm-hmm.
It was built in 1955. It was upgraded with the earthquake up to a 6-point earthquake. Well, the Loma Prieta was over 6-point.
Right.
And so the city council is short-sighted in, I think, what their vision is. Their vision is for what developers want. Because if this is a crosstown connector interchange at Rainier, all those trucks are now going to get off at Rainier to go up to the business parks.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make any sense. Well, so,
since you referenced council members, I recall in the last election, I voted for some council members. One of them wasn't successful, and he's here with us. That's Dennis. and Dennis, I remember one of the reasons I voted for you was your commitment to making the city more pedestrian-friendly and your commitment to fighting climate change and your commitment to mixed use and affordable housing. I'm interested to get your take on this project, what you think about it.
Yeah, well, I think based on the numbers that everyone has seen over and over now, I think they're from ABAG that show that, you know, the city has produced in the last 4 years twice the amount of market rate housing that we were said to need, and yet somewhere around 10% of the low and extremely low income housing, that every new development we ought to be trying to find a way to make them 50% affordable.
Yeah.
You know, mixed income, 50% affordable. I don't think it's as hard as it's made out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Barnacle, if I could mention him, was going to come today. I think he had something else come up. But I saw something written by him recently which talked about some grant money which the city has failed to apply for.
Right.
I really think, and again, we can call it affordable housing, we can call it workforce housing, we can call it mixed income housing, but the fact is that over half of our families need some subsidy to get into housing.
Yeah. And you make a good point that there is funding available to help with mixed-use development, transit-oriented development. That was, I know, a big thing that a lot of the council members were talking about is the idea of leveraging the power of those grants to develop more mixed-use developments.
Well, the thing is with the grants, there was a woman who moved to Petaluma about 2 or 3 years ago. I happened to meet her on the Lynch Creek Trail. I had talked about this when I was with Ken Savano one mm-hmm. day. And we met her, and I ran into her recently at a council meeting. She actually went for a grant. I think the grant is between, is it $300,000 or $600,000? I'm not sure. But at least at $300,000, that is a chunk of change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really to start looking about how we can be more pedestrian friendly in our community, how to actually develop
mm-hmm.
Smarter. And so grants are available.
Yeah.
And there's also money at the state. I mean, if you're willing to put in, I hate to call it low-income housing because, you know, a lot of our family members can live in low, can't afford market rates.
I think for Petaluma, anyone making less than $80,000 a year is probably low income.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the thing is,
everyone's pushing 90.
And when we're talking about apartments, there are a lot of apartments in this town, but they're not full because people can't afford to live there.
Right.
So grants are available.
Yeah.
I really like what Brian has to say. I like his thinking. And I like to see more young people getting active in this town. And with the Corona Project, there is a good group of people working together. And same with the Sid Common, because we all have something in common.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we really want to make our community a walkable community. We want it to be friendly. I want to welcome all these younger people that are coming into our community because they have really good thoughts and they want to become active, and the town's changing.
I mean, the city declared a climate emergency. It was unanimous. I don't understand how not pushing for these more sustainable types of developments, I don't see how that's not intrinsic to that goal.
Well,
I'm very confused.
Demanded by that goal.
Well, they just thought, well, we'll just go ahead and support this, but we can just go ahead and still push all the projects that we wanted.
Oh.
You know, for the last 20 years, Councilmember Healy's been working with the same developer, Sid Common, for 20 years.
Oh.
He's worked with the Lomas Group, and I'm sure Warmington is coming up very soon, too.
Might be interesting to look at some of those campaign finance reports from some of these council members to see if there's any correlation.
Well, an easy way to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the correlation is we know by vote what actually happened.
We actually have some of them on our website from the last election. But those can all be found on the city website.
Well, today in the paper, Thursday's Argus Courier, yesterday, Climate Board irked at council's decision. And so basically the council majority, not the majority, the entire council put a climate change group together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they basically said, well, we're not going to give you any resources. Mm-hmm. We're not going to listen to what you have to say. But we're going to go ahead and put it on our campaign literature that we support climate change is what's going to end up happening.
Yeah.
And so you read this and you realize that they basically – you got a commission together, and then they realized that they weren't important to the majority of the council.
They actually would be correct if they said they were supporting climate change.
That's who they are, Climate change in the wrong dimension.
Fighting climate change.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's something else in the paper that was interesting, and it was about, let's see if I can get to it. It was about Hen House Brewery. And about accidents up by Hen House,
Anitas.
And we've known this for a long time. that this is a dangerous area. Yeah. There's no crosswalks in this area. And this goes back to all of the money that's going into one project, and the city will not put sidewalks in to make it safe for pedestrians, because Cindy, Jason, myself, we did this walk.
Well, let's talk about how we got there, too, because originally those were all, like, office complexes, right? And there wasn't a sense that there was going to be things like Lagunitas and House Brewery. But guess what? Things changed, and those office buildings went vacant. And so other uses have happened, using it for something like a brewery. But that obviously means there should be sidewalks. Because now we have a whole different type of pattern in terms of use. It's people.
We have a smart train that's coming to the area, and no sidewalks for the people that work in these places, because there's all kinds of businesses down there that we don't even know are there. Yeah. You have to go up and down these streets and look for them. But there's a huge pharmaceutical company right next to the fire department.
Yeah.
And so people could get off at the smart train, walk to work, and the city council majority is not putting two and two together.
No.
And this is basic math. This is so simple.
Yeah.
And for them not to look beyond the piece of land is why we need a change on the city council.
Yeah.
There are, when you think about, you got me thinking about the Crosstown Connector, Giannis, and, reviewing a few things that I haven't really looked at in detail since I ran for city council. You're reminded that almost every dollar of traffic mitigation fees that new developments pay is going in the coffers for the Rainier Crosstown Connector.
That's right.
The biggest part of the Measure M money going for the Crosstown Connector. That's the list you showed me that
we
talked about.
That's right.
So we're doing nothing else but save for this, and we're saving for something that we're worried already might be a dinosaur and won't be built for at least 10 years, if not 20.
Well, it's something to talk about on the campaign literature.
Yes, yes.
I mean, since 1962, they say it's been in the general plan. 1962, just remember going to Disneyland, you could barely see, the skyline because of how much pollution was there.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to go back to 1962. We need to get the dinosaurs off the council, and we need to come into 220.
Yeah, and while you brought that up, I'd like to, one of my big issues with the council is came after I went to two meetings of the Sonoma City Council last year to work on a $15 minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed that at the Sonoma City Council, everyone referred to different proposals that the council members had made on their own, things that they thought the city needed to do.
Right.
I don't see that ever happening with our council. I see them as only reacting to something the staff says, or to something a citizen says, to something a developer says. Never to come up with just, this is the right thing to do for our city.
Dennis, I wish you were on that city council.
Yep.
We need somebody that is a thinker and has a heart.
Yep.
And thank you for running, and I hope you do again.
Okay, let's
oh boy.
Oh God.
Well, an important point is he's a valued member of our community, and we're really happy to have him here.
I want to mention something that I failed to mention in introducing Dennis is that it's Dr. Dennis Post.
You told us not to say that.
Did you say that? Well, I'm sorry. I have to, because I retired from the same Kaiser that you did, and I need to do that out of respect.
I'm sure it's the same for you. Kaiser's like my brother, that if you get too positive, I go against you, and if you get too negative, I'll also go against
you. Exactly. Yeah. But I wanted to acknowledge that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nate. Yeah. Jason, I'm sorry.
You talked about the Rainier Crosstown Connector. I remember you spoke about it quite a bit, and you had some good numbers about why you thought it was going to cost more than the estimates were. And when you were talking about that, I think a lot of people didn't realize that you have an engineering background as well. But I don't know if you recall those numbers, but I remember some people thought you were kind of maybe pessimistic or something like that, but I think the numbers were actually pretty realistic.
No, I think they haven't changed much. The thing Janet just showed me says that they have $30 million to spend and they need a total of $115.
Yeah.
And one of the points that I think that I tried to make over and over again when I was running is that we're only you know, at that point in time, by my best calculations, we were still in the single digits. At the most, 8 or 9 million a year we were going to save from different sources of money to build this thing. Mm-hmm. And on 100 million, inflation is 3 or 4 or 5% a year,
right.
3 or 4 or 5 million. So, you know, so we're only getting half as close to it every year as we think. And as I said, we know we have to change and get out of our cars, and I think the city council has to lead in that to some respect and not just be worried about getting elected again in 4 years.
Well, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're walking in my neighborhood, you never saw people walking. But since the Deer Creek Shopping Center was there, and, you know, if it was a truer mixed use, we'd have a lot more movement in there. But there's a dog park there that's going to be closed because of the freeway work. All these people are walking around with their animals. They're connecting. There's a community now. And that's what you will see down by the smart station. You're going to see a community down there. But if you build it as an island and you forget to put upgrade the streets and the sidewalks and the intersections, so the entire intersection is actually walkable, we won't have that because it's not safe. But if we go ahead and go in that direction, you're going to see people walking all around this town. You walk downtown, you see moms with baby strollers all the time. You see senior citizens walking. People are really wanting to get out of their cars, and they want to walk more, and they're willing to do it because people that were raised in Petaluma, we were used to getting in a car to go everywhere. People in cities, they're used to walking.
Yeah.
And we need to recognize that the town is changing, and the city council is still a dinosaur.
Well, we thought they were more advanced by creating this Climate Action Commission, but I'm finding the article right here that says, Petaluma Council decisions irk the Climate Board. Climate Action Commissioners Thursday expressed their disappointment over City Council's recent approval of the controversial Sid Commons apartment development, renewing questions over how the nascent and relatively toothless body will impact city decisions. So they've got this commission, they make their recommendations, and they're ignored. Similarly, as our planning commission projects. So the last few weeks have been difficult, to say the least, for a climate activist to be sitting on the council, said the Councilwoman and Climate Action Commission liaison, Delinda Fisher. And it says both Vice Mayor Fisher and Mayor Teresa Barrett voted against the Sid Commons development, unconvinced the environmental studies of the project adequately address potential impacts on the parcel's wetland and riparian corridor. They also questioned whether the reports relied on the best available data, especially in regards to anticipated sea level rise and increased flooding. These are exactly the same concerns from the Planning Commission that went against those projects. It's the exact same concerns from the Climate Commission. What the heck is going on, and what's up with Kevin? I voted for this guy, and I thought he was running on a platform of sustainability and transit-oriented development. Why is he rolling over?
Campaigns are interesting, aren't they?
What the heck?
You really don't know who a person is by the literature they send out.
He's so lost my support, and I don't mind saying it, because, I read his literature. He was recommended to me. I expect him to vote the right way on these projects, and I'm very disappointed. I wish I had put more effort into Dennis.
Well, he was endorsed by David Rabbit.
You know, that happened late. So he held off on getting Rabbit's endorsement until the very end. I had already endorsed him by then.
Yeah.
But as soon as I saw that, I was like, uh-oh, what did I do? I should have taken my sign down right then.
The last month or two, I thought it was pretty obvious he was trying to situate himself right on top of Dave King.
Well, boy, did I screw up. Yeah. If you do ever run again, I'm telling you, man, I'm all in for you.
Back to the SCTA list and what, the SCTA. When you
and SCTA?
Sonoma County Transportation Authority,
okay.
Which oversees the Widening 101 and transportation in the county. And so when you look them up on the website, I believe it says SCTA, and then it's also the Climate Change Commission, talks about SCTA, and then the Climate Change Commission mm-hmm. is all working together, basically. And so how can you have the Petaluma list, which is opposite of climate change, and you know, so I think it's really important for people to go to these meetings in Santa Rosa, voice your opinion, because otherwise this is going to be the list Petaluma's going to get. And the street in front of your house is not part of it.
This is really simple. Who's up for council?
Mike Healy, Gabe Kearney, and Kathy.
Get them out. I mean, this is just ridiculous.
Well, I mean, they don't listen. They don't listen to you.
Yeah.
And it's 1962 thinking, and it's just time for a change in this
town.
And people that actually
a lot of people are tired of it. I mean, I don't participate in the dialogue on the social network next door, but I do lurk because I get email bulletins telling me, oh, this is the hot topic. Well, there's a really hot topic going on, and it's people talking about. Get these people out.
Yeah.
We need new blood. It's time for these guys to
go. Well, I would love to see...
So we aren't the only ones who's thinking that way.
Some more, you know, more council members in the model of Teresa Barrett and Delinda Fisher. So I don't know if we can get candidates that can do that in time. I'm not sure who's going to be running. But
it's interesting that nobody has announced at this point, because usually somebody's coming out of the woodwork by January.
Well, typically... No, a lot of times it's not till like Labor Day, or just before that people announce.
Labor Day, or you mean May Day?
Yeah,
Memorial Day.
Labor Day, September.
Sorry, Memorial Day.
And August is normally when you have to get your paperwork in. And so, if people are interested in running for council, we'd love to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We are going to interview our candidates.
Well, and we want to hear from people in the community what they really think.
Yeah.
And that goes to. We need to get a line in so people can actually call in.
Well, we do have a line in. The number here is 707-981-7577.
So they could like
call right now.
Jason's going to try it and see if it works.
What's that?
Yeah, that would be cool if somebody called
get
in.
Get it all set up here.
Yeah, because I think we really need to know what people are thinking. We know what people say on Nextdoor.
And, you know, the developers, for example, this project you're talking about Monday night, you know, there are all these
caveats of promises
or other deals, you know, that they're going to they're going to buy the downtown lot.
They're going to buy the downtown lot, and then they're going to put the parking in. But Smart also wants to close where the buses come in and out. They want to close that to cars. And that would be a nightmare in that area. And so that has to, because right after this meeting, interesting on Monday, they're going to be talking about Sid Common first, then they're going to be talking about the Corona site. And the last thing is negotiating with Smart.
Yeah.
So they're going to boom, boom, boom. You know there's going to be the four votes for this project or five. And then they're going to turn around and they're going to negotiate with Smart. We don't even know what the negotiation is. The public has been left in the dark. And the fact is the public doesn't realize they want to close a street. And then they want to take the lower income housing and put it out by Petaluma Boulevard South.
Right.
I mean, and the thing is that the council is what developers are learning is all we have to do is hire a past planner that worked for the city of Petaluma. She will go ahead and shepherd us through, and then if we don't get what we want, she's going to say, just appeal it to the city council. And you don't appeal to the city council unless you can count votes.
And threat a lawsuit.
Exactly. And then, unfortunately, the public's option is to try and get money from citizens to do a lawsuit. So the imbalance is huge.
Yeah.
It's really disappointing. And, I mean, I had a council person say, well, if you want to do that, get yourself a lawyer.
Yeah.
Well, that is really not what I want to hear from a council person.
No.
I want to hear a little bit more. I want them to start using their voice.
So on the subject of climate change and, of course, the fire danger that we have that's very real and very concerning, apparently now there's some new helicopters.
I saw that.
So that's pretty interesting. It will change how we operate. Cal Fire buys first helicopters that can fight fires at night. So I didn't realize that. We don't have helicopters that can fight fires at night. Now we do.
It's actually a good thing.
Yeah, so facing wildfires of epic proportions, California's firefighting agency is requiring nearly $300 million worth of new weapons, a dozen high-powered helicopters equipped to drop water on flaming woodlands and fields in darkness, manned by pilots wearing night vision goggles. So if they had had these during the Paradise Fire, maybe that would have made a difference.
Yeah, that Paradise Fire was
so horrible.
Yeah, that was... that. Yeah.
It's terrible.
We're never able to do much at night, yeah, so that should help.
Right, right. And the state is coming through with this money, correct?
Yeah, so one of the Cal Fire Hawks, a sleek twin-engine helicopter that cruises at 160 miles per hour and costs $24 million, will be based in June at the Vena Helitech base on Highway 99 north of Chico in Tahoma County.
Oh.
It's capable of reaching Lake Berryessa in 30 minutes with 8 firefighters aboard and 1,000 gallons of water in a tank on its belly. That's 15 minutes faster and 3 times more water than the Vietnam War-era Super Huey copters that will be replaced over time by modified versions of the Sikorsky Black Hawk flown by U.S. forces and others around the world. And then I hear, like, Wagner. This reminds me of Apocalypse Now.
Exactly. A little music there.
It's an exciting time for Cal Fire, said Dennis Brown, senior chief of aviation based at McClellan Airport in Sacramento. It will change how we operate.
It's going to be interesting to see if this fire tax passes.
And there's a base. There's 23 aircraft bases statewide, including at the Charles M. Schultz Sonoma County Airport. Bob's Mountain in Lake County, Ukiah Municipal Airport, and Howard Forest in Willits. Also requiring at no cost 7 former Coast Guard C-130 air tankers. So interesting. This is, you know, some more tools to fight fires.
And you know what? I happen to know the physician who's the chief physician for Cal Fire.
Oh, really?
And the interesting thing I've learned from him is that the vast majority of their injuries and deaths that they have fighting fires relate to being macho, you know, to guys not wanting to be the first one to say, you know, I got to get off the line.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah. Don't be macho.
Yeah. It's my daughter was worked with the Hot Shots up in by Quincy. And, you know, it was really scary, the photos that you saw. Yeah. I mean, sometimes, like, the flames would come in, and, I mean, trees were just bursting. And unfortunately, someone was hit by at this particular incident. And I always hated that she was, you know, working so close.
Janet,
it was scary.
Janet, you're setting me up again. You know, the other night at the Democratic debate, Janice comes in. I'm standing in the back of the room, and Janice comes in and says, I'm hot. And I say, Janice, show some humility. You know, you shouldn't.
None.
Okay.
I was raised by my father, and it's kind of scary. So repeating history.
So I know you don't want to flex your doctor title on the show, but since you do have a lot of experience in healthcare, maybe you have some opinions on this ongoing issue with Petaluma Valley Hospital. There's an article here that talks about now there's a secular operator proposed for Petaluma Hospital. And apparently Providence St. Joseph Health has proposed a Washington-based subsidiary take over operations of Petaluma Valley Hospital, the latest twist in the search for a long-term operator that has stretched into a third year.
Yeah, I'm all for that, actually. I made my first visit to the Petaluma Healthcare District Board, last year, both to mention that and, you know, that we needed to have a full provision of women's health services and a full provision of end-of-life services. I feel really strongly about it.
Oh, because it's not just a reproductive choice. So just for the listeners, the issue is that it's been a St. Joseph-run hospital.
Which is Catholic.
Which is Catholic. And so they, because of their religion, preclude access to certain types of care. I guess certain options for women's reproductive choice. And now I think what you're talking about would be end of life.
Getting medical aid in dying and setting your own time to die as opposed to waiting for your cancer to take its time.
Well, my personal feeling is people can believe in, you know, whatever they want, but when they start curtailing you know, the options of health for people, that's just not right.
For people outside of Kaiser and Sutter, it's been very difficult to gain access to that law in Sonoma County. In Sonoma County, most people who've accessed it in Sonoma County, I believe, outside who didn't have Kaiser or Sutter, had to pay for a physician to come up from Berkeley to help them access the law. And he just held, I was just last week, actually on Valentine's Day, it started at the first national conference for aid in dying providers, okay? I was retired already when this began, and I'd given up my my DEA license, so I can't write the prescription for that, but I have served in a half a dozen cases as a consulting physician. You have to have two opinions to be able to access it. And so Lonnie Shavelson from Berkeley that ran this course, he also, I suppose, decided to run the course because he was getting tired of traveling the whole North State to help people with this. And he announced basically at the conference, maybe not, he didn't announce it yet, but that he's planning to, you know, this was his last great effort to get more people involved, more physicians and nurses involved, and but he wants to get out of being the traveling end-of-life aid in dying doctor, which I commend him. I thought it was a great idea to get 300 people together and then say that we need to take care of this problem.
I didn't realize how long. So St. Joseph has operated Petaluma Valley Hospital since 1997, originally on a 20-year lease and on an interim basis since the lease expired in 2017. The company was expected to renew its lease, but negotiations broke down over financial terms, a non-compete clause, and St. Joseph's unwillingness to continue offering some female reproductive services.
Well, that's kind of why I always thought that the health district was created, so women could have health rights because the affiliation with St. Joseph. But I believe men could always get Viagra.
Yep.
Yes. So so men can get Viagra, but women don't have a choice. And so women need to understand this.
Yeah.
What about the coronavirus?
You
Dr.
know,
Posick, eh?
Good question.
It's somewhere, you know, in the range. I don't believe the severity of it has been as bad as SARS, for example,
okay.
but the number of cases has been more.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I haven't seen a case. We haven't had a case in Sonoma County. I think, you know, it's a fine line, you know. I hate to see people start to wear masks and to use antiseptic things all over their body and all over their exercise equipment and all over their car and every place like that, because we also know that
it kills good stuff too, right?
And some of this bad stuff is actually good stuff. I mean, the bad stuff is not good stuff, but people that, you know, eat a little more dirt and poop in their childhood have significantly less of certain
more resistance.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm starting to rethink travel plans. You know, did you hear that Facebook canceled their conference in San Francisco because of this?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so they're taking it very seriously. Now, I think it's because there were a lot of people that would not be able to attend that would be coming from, you know, places in the world such as Asia where it's more rampant. But, I mean, that's concerning. And, of course, that has a ripple effect because think about all of the economics involved.
Exactly.
You know. So, you know, I'm thinking about this. There's a trade show coming up that I'm supposed to go to, but that's probably the worst possible thing to do, a combination of flying and then being in an enclosed space.
Is it out of the country? Or in
the country? There's one in Las Vegas that I'm considering going to in April, and just after that would be in Berlin, Germany. So,
you know, you can't stop your life, though. I mean,
well,
it goes, I don't know. I mean, that could stop your life.
I mean, Zuckerberg did. I mean, he said, we're going to cancel the conference. So,
well,
I don't
know. Probably economics.
Yeah, I'm guessing is that a lot of people wouldn't have been able to attend.
Right,
and that's
so
probably,
the economics.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So did he really care, or was it economics?
We probably didn't want an empty conference.
Right. Exactly.
But, I mean, we're certainly, you know, I don't advocate any kind of panicking or anything.
Well, all these new viruses and pathogens, you know, that's the problem. We don't know what they're right. going to do.
Yeah.
We're really just doing the epidemiology and learning what to do if it comes back another time. You know, it's very difficult.
Maybe it's just the Earth's way of cleansing itself from these. Maybe we're the pesky viruses.
I hate to say it.
You're far back in the line when people say that. I like science fiction a little too much. And it's a big topic in science fiction now is people inventing a supercomputer that decides the main problem the Earth has is humans.
Yeah, we are the virus in the cell.
Yeah. We've known that for a while.
Hmm. Anyway, on a more upbeat topic.
Looks like there's more changes at Lagunitas.
Yeah, I see the CEO is resigning. Yeah. They did have a couple layoffs, I guess. So the chief executive of Lagunitas, Paloma, announced Thursday she's leaving the company after nearly 5 years as its leader. Maria Stipp's last day is Friday, and then she'll be replaced by Dennis Peek, managing director of Heineken Canada. The announcement comes after Lagunitas had gone through two spates of layoffs since 2018 under Stipp's tenure. She worked to realign the brewing company and amid slowing growth in the U.S. craft beer sector. So she's decided to pursue a different challenge in her career. Everybody knows that Heineken bought them. Since 2017, they've been full owner. Tony McGee and the rest of his investors sold the remaining half of the craft brewery to the Amsterdam-based company. They have 650 people in the Petaluma plant and in Chicago. And McGee had hired Stipp to manage the craft brewer's exploding growth. Anyway, it sounds like she just...
At some point, you lose different. The designation of craft brewer if your sales explode past a certain point.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Right.
I guess the formula is supposed to be the same, and obviously they've got the same look and aesthetic, but...
I have to say, and I don't know any details of this, and I haven't heard anyone else complain about it, but, you know, it seems to me that this sale of it, 50% on day one, and the other 50% 2 or 3 years later, is related to avoiding taxes, you know, under Prop 13, corporate Prop 13, that you only have to, you only change the tax base of a corporation when you sell at least 50.1% of it.
That's interesting.
That's right. Well, it's going to be interesting because that's going to be on, hopefully on the ballot in November. And I'm actually trying to get information, a little bit more information about it, because I had some concerns from friends who feel as though the farming community might be affected by this, the mom-and-pop farmers, which, you know, can be large, you know, not just small farming. But, you know, when you're looking at corporate farming, that's really kind of what you're looking at for the Prop 13, not necessarily mom-and-pop. So I have actually my feelers out to find out what will really be affected by this, what corporations. But on the other hand, then, you know, you have corporations that they go ahead and sell over a certain amount, and then they get to keep the Prop 13, and it's a shell game is what they're doing. And so it's going to be interesting to find out what happens, and because I've read the language, I don't believe that farmers are part of that, but if you're a corporate farmer, it would be a different story, so you don't want to mix them together. So I did call Farm Bureau, and I need to call them back because they have an answer for me. And then I'm still contacting a friend in Sacramento who's going to get more information on it because I want to be very well informed before making a decision, because in the language it says, like, buildings past $3 million will be affected. And, you know, sometimes you live in an area like this, it could be a $3 million building, but that's not a lot of money compared to other areas. Yeah. And so there's some concern about it, but I definitely feel as though the loopholes need to be closed in Prop 13, and those are some of the loopholes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that is why they go ahead and they do these shell games, and they sell this, and then a certain percentage, and then the other percentage. Yeah. And, you know, so. And yet at the same time, these businesses right down on McDowell, they refuse to put a signal so people can get across safely. And so, you know, these businesses make a lot of money, but they don't really want to participate in the community except they do participate.
Well, Lagunitas.
Lagunitas has actually done a lot for the community.
Absolutely.
But I think safety is a number one.
Well, there's an article here that's interesting that talks about beer events in the focus after a spate of Petaluma DUIs.
Oh, exactly.
So there's been similar collisions earlier this month that surpassed weekly averages fourfold, leading law enforcement to question the isolated surge and possible correlation with local beer-focused events.
But, you know, we don't have, if the smart train was there, people could walk there.
Well, if they had some disabilities. I would say that's it. Look, don't misunderstand me. I mean, I'm not suggesting that people, should be taking cannabis and driving, of course.
Or
but,
drinking and smoking and driving.
But DUIs.
Texting and driving.
Well,
anything.
Alcohol
exactly.
is certainly worse in terms of motor control and things like that. But, I mean, people shouldn't be doing either. But I just think if we had an alternative to all this liquor, that might be better. And we get some revenue, some tax revenue.
This is why
even if we didn't, there's other alternatives to driving in your car while you're in
Pittsburgh. There are. There's ride services. There's shuttles people can get.
Well, I was driving by Lagunitas and Hen House the other day. It was, I think, on Sunday. And there are these two women right on the corner with no sidewalk. And you could tell they really weren't sure what to do.
No.
And so it's not just being impaired driving. You can walk impaired. No. And you're trying to go from one side of the road to the other.
No.
And this goes back to the Corona site and talking about why we need to really look at the bigger picture, which is making our community walkable.
Yeah.
And, so it bothers me that I appreciate the 6 crashes in 8 days. We've got a problem here.
Yeah.
But I don't see the police department saying, you know what, we would like to see more sidewalks and we would want to see safer streets.
Out of those 6 crashes, how many of those were impaired drivers? All of them?
I believe.
Yeah, I mean, It's a long.
It's like we were leaving Hen House.
Yeah, 2 occurred less than 30 minutes apart before 6 as patrons drove away from Hen House Brewing Company.
Well, you don't even need to have to be impaired to try and maneuver that corner where Hen House is.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where those women were on the corner.
Yeah.
And it was really dangerous.
Well, it's interesting. It's also talking about some of the beers that have higher alcohol content as partly being a problem.
Hen House has an 11%.
Yeah, this big chicken double IPA has an alcohol by volume of roughly 11%.
Yeah.
Relatively high percentage. And it's more common.
What wine normally?
Yeah. Well, in comparison,
that would be like, exactly.
So that's more common for craft beers, but in comparison, beers such as Corona, Heineken, and Budweiser contain alcohol by volume of about 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, if people aren't used to that and they think, oh, I can have 3 beers and they're having, 11% per beer.
Well, this one was saying also at the Roaring Donkey Bar, somebody left and they got in a crash and crashed into a parked car on D Street.
Yeah.
And so it's not just Hen House. And so I really don't like when they're kind of focusing on one business when the business downtown had a problem, too.
Yeah, it's all over.
Yeah.
It says in 2019, police said there were 59 DUI collisions in Petaluma and about 200 arrests on suspicion of driving under the influence. The department saw its highest recorded number of DUI-related events in 2008, with 605 arrests and 147 collisions.
Now, I wonder what percentage of those were folks who were engaging in drinking at businesses as opposed to in their own homes or at a party
or in a park.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's kind of unfair to the businesses to be accusing them of what basically is bad judgment on the drivers.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, this article doesn't exactly do that. It just mentions that there was that incident there, but it doesn't seem to be really blaming. It's just sort of a reality, and it's kind of like, okay, wait a minute. What needs to change? Maybe some more responsibility from some of the people. I mean, already you have to cut people off, I guess, after they've had certain number of drinks, right?
And I'm sure that varies from place to place.
And then, maybe there could be a thing where they have a ride service. I don't know if they already do, but that could be a thing that some of these establishments could do.
That's what Ernie Skinbar does.
They don't hire.
They don't hire the driver.
Yeah.
It's a volunteer, and you just tip the driver. They'll go and pick you up at home and bring you to Ernie's, and then take you from Ernie's and take you home. All you got to do is tip the driver.
I did it once. It was really great to see.
But it does go back to the whole idea of living in a situation where you don't have to use a car to get to a bar.
Well,
you know, where you can live in a downtown with mixed-use development, where you go out of your house, you step down to your local bar, you have some fun, you have your dinner, and you walk home and you're fine. No one gets hurt.
Well, that is a very good fantasy, but that's not going to happen.
It's the reality for people who live downtown.
No, if you're downtown, but if you don't live downtown, it's not going
to
happen.
But again, that speaks to the point we were talking about earlier with mixed use and developments around transit-oriented development.
Well, it's just the fact that if you build sidewalks and if you have safer roads and streets, people will walk because they feel safe. People know Petaluma is one of the most unsafe towns, and I just want to reiterate that.
What?
Very unsafe for walking.
Oh, for walking.
but you know, that's all the ADA stuff that's being done downtown is because the city got sued. They had 10 years to fix a list that was, you know, 2 pages long, and that seems to be the only thing that the city listens to. And it's unfortunate, I guess.
But even so, as you showed me, it seems like a lot of the places where they put in wheelchair ramps or whatever they're called. They're the road to nowhere, you know.
Exactly.
There's a stop sign on one side and another sign on the other side to keep you from going anywhere.
And that's when Dennis was running. We went and did my transportation tour and, you know, talking about the poles in the middle of the sidewalks. And, you know, it's so interesting. People are finally getting engaged down at the mobile home park because it's a project that got them engaged.
Yeah.
And they realize that they don't want to be put on an island and they can't leave where they live.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
Our whole society has, you know, lots of different things like that that keep people in their island.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's why I'm really, you know, people always say, oh, she does this because she lives close to Rainier. It has nothing to do with that. It's just a bad project. It's too much money. And we want a walkable community, and that's
it. So there's a community event tomorrow.
Yes.
You should announce
that. Thank
you,
Jason. Yeah. Oh, a community event tomorrow at Herzog Hall. The city is actually putting on a forum for the community to come and talk about issues like this.
Yeah.
Things that they want to see in our community. A lot of community engagement. So it's at Herzog Hall. It starts, which is at the fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
It starts tomorrow at 9. It's from 9 to noon. I can only be there till around 11. I need
actually 9 till 2 p.m.
You know, you're right. I mean, I saw 2 o'clock and I said noon. It is. It's 9
to 2.
We
call it a workshop.
It's a workshop. And I think it's really important for people to come and voice their opinion.
Yeah.
Because groups are getting together now. Mm-hmm. Now we really want to start voicing our opinion and let the city council know that we're speaking and we want you to start hearing.
If you read their summary of the progress they've made, you know, boy, it sounds a lot better than it feels to me.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
The city's doing a very good job of rah-rahing itself.
Yeah.
But I feel as though there's still that cement wall in front of you and people don't realize that you're still stuck on this side of the wall. And it's true.
They need more workshops, though. Not everybody can show up tomorrow, so why is there not more?
Yeah.
Well, actually, they should have more workshops, but at least they've had the one at the community center, then they had a second one, and so this is a third one, which is kind of new for this city to really bring the public in to engage.
Well, they have had a lot more workshops. They had the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Workshop, and they had they've had several financial workshops.
Right.
So it's still hard for me to believe that they haven't settled on a new revenue producing plan. You know that all the new people elected this last time said the city needed.
Yeah.
Right.
It's getting late to get it on the ballot this year.
No, because the city council can go ahead and put it on the ballot.
Okay.
They don't have to get signatures. If you and I wanted to put something on the ballot, we'd have to get signatures.
I know that, but they still have to get it on a few months.
Yeah.
Well, and they need to have a discussion of what you really want and how it's going to work. And we know that a quarter cent is more palatable than a half a cent is what you always find. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure what's going to happen, but we will see.
Yeah. They seem very wary of doing anything other than a sales tax, which I think is, you know, one of the more regressive taxes. It'd be better to tax wealth.
Yeah.
Guess what?
I think we're out of time.
Yes.
I hear the music.
Yes, in fact we are. We're at that point. I want to mention that the views and opinions expressed on Inside Petaluma are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Petaluma Community Access. But we do have our opinions, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And we're entitled to that.
That's right. And so far, I mean, we're heading toward Russia, but we're not there yet.
Oh, boy.
We're very close.
I want to thank Dennis Kay for being here today. Thank you, Dennis. Do come back. And we will be back next Friday from 11 to noon. We are Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, co-hosting with Jason Davies and Janice Peter Thompson, and we're here every Friday for you to talk about hot topics here in Petaluma. You can also visit our past shows at our website, insidepetaluma.com, and we also have a Facebook page, KPTA Inside Petaluma, so check it out. Stay tuned for Jordan Torres, who is Brown Boy Talking. He's with you from noon to 1. And everybody have a good weekend.
And you too.
Have a great weekend.
Yes. It's a beautiful weekend.
Yes. See you all.
My love is a prelude that never dies, a prelude to a kiss. Nothing much. you could turn it to a symphony, a Schubert tune with a Gershwin touch. Oh, how my love song gently cries for the tenderness within your eyes. My love is a prelude that never dies, a prelude to